illegal grows across California. Now it's coming to the cities. Can you explain to us what's going on?
You're having a lot of people take over warehouses and turning them to cultivation facilities. We've seen people take over homes cultivating marijuana.
People probably wouldn't know the difference. They just drive by and it looks like a residential house.
A case in Sacramento where they took down over 100 homes. Each home was being used for cultivation of marijuana.
In residential areas.
Residential areas.
This is very, very high level sophistication, organized networks. These operations are worth a lot of money.
Our guest today is David Welch, who serves as the special counsel for narcotic enforcement in cities across Los Angeles County. We also sit down with El Monte Chief Police, Jake Fisher, who'll tell us how these illegal grows operate and what their impacts are on the community. Our guests explain that many illegal grows are highly organized criminal enterprises, and cities throughout LA County are having difficulties in dealing with them.
County of Los Angeles is overwhelmed. We've seen situations where we have people that are undocumented, that seem like they're forced to work in these homes. We've seen a lot of involvement of foreign nationals, individuals that are tied to transnational criminal organizations. The victims are not only the people that are, you know, being trafficked, but also sometimes the people that own the property that are being lied to and being used to facilitate this illegal activity.
When you catch some of these facilities, what happens next? We have heard that there is no consequence. I'm Siamak Kurami. Welcome to California Insider. David, it's great to have you on. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
David, we have been covering cartels and different people coming and doing illegal grows across California in rural areas. Mm-hmm. But it came to our attention that this is not just a rural areas problem. Now it's coming to the cities in Los Angeles, in the county of LA. Can you explain to us what's going on?
Well, I think it's been going on for a while. It's just that now there's attention put on it. You're having a lot of people take over warehouses that were once used for, you know, manufacturing purposes and turning them to cultivation facilities. In the inner city, you have people taking over buildings that are vacant because there's no one occupying for retail services and using to operate dispensaries. And now people are focusing on them because they're really impacting not only the communities, but also the legal marijuana trade inside of California.
So is it in the residential communities? Is it stores? How does it work? Can you explain to us what you've seen?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've seen a lot over the last 4 years. We've been working really inside these different cities throughout LA County. We've seen thousands and thousands of plants being cultivated in warehouses. We've seen people take over homes and turn the homes not into like not only dormitories where people are living there, but also cultivating marijuana. But then we've seen people take over storefronts in cities that frankly don't have the budget to close them down. And they operate these storefronts without care. They get cited. They don't pay the citations. They get warned. Even when police go in and effectuate a search warrant and close them down, they'll open up the next day. Frankly, it's almost every city throughout Los Angeles County.
Wow.
That's experiencing this. It's hard to name just a couple cities. We work for a few cities. We work in Compton, El Monte, but most cities are experiencing this type of issue. City of Los Angeles is overwhelmed. County of Los Angeles is overwhelmed, the unincorporated areas. And a lot of times cities don't have the resources to even identify the illegal operations.
When we were covering the rural areas, they told us there's an element of human trafficking. And there's other elements where like people go there and shoot each other. It's more than just the illegal grows. There's a lot more components to it.
Yeah, unfortunately, with narcotics, there tends to have this other undercurrent of criminality that goes along with it. There are stories where dispensary in South LA, in the city of Los Angeles, where a young gentleman, he was in his early 20s, did not realize he was operating and working at an illegal dispensary.
Oh, wow.
When he found out, he became concerned. The actual owners eventually murdered him to try to keep quiet their operation. It was covered on the news, and it's well known. A friend of mine actually knew the mother of the son, the person that was murdered. You have situations where one investigation we have that's currently in court, you had a dispensary operating on the bottom floor, and then you had the person renting out the top floor to undocumented persons that couldn't rent apartments other places. They were operating other types of facilities there. They were distributing other types of drugs there. This all took place across the street from a preschool. You have a lot of illegal activity ongoing. We've seen situations where we have people that are undocumented, that seem like they're forced to work in these homes where they turn them into cultivation facilities or grow sites. They have really no option, from what we understand. They're paying off their debt to the coyote that brought them across the border. And, you know, they don't speak English. They speak, whether it's Cantonese, Mandarin, and Spanish. And they have no papers, aside from maybe a foreign passport.
So they're trafficked here to actually do this. So because they want to come to the U.S. and they're illegally coming in, then they are put into these places to...
We've seen stories of people that have been trafficked. We've seen individuals without local identification that have foreign passports, that do not speak English, that have no documentation of how they entered the country. Without going as far and saying the word trafficked, there's a lot of evidence to indicate that they are.
And these people... they don't go out, they don't kind of run away, because when we were talking about rural areas, mm-hmm. they were in remote areas, they couldn't get out of those facilities because they don't know where to go. But in the cities, do people come out of these facilities, or are they afraid because they are illegal?
A lot of times when we're looking for individuals who we believed are undocumented or lack identification, we can't find them when it's time for us to file our suit. They disappear. They're not the main leader. They find themselves in other avenues. For instance, I have one situation where they were found at a grow site, and then they ended up working in a massage parlor, or trying to get somebody trying to apply for a massage parlor license underneath their name.
Can you give us some examples? Because a lot of us may not know that this is happening in the cities. Like, mm-hmm. Can you tell us like what you have seen?
I'll tell you some of the things that struck me. There was one situation where an individual, money came from abroad. They purchased real estate in Southern California, and they had specifically three houses on a block. Each house was turned into a marijuana cultivation facility.
Wow.
Each house had individuals who were undocumented working in them. This individual was growing cannabis or marijuana. We don't know where it was going, but I can tell you that from my previous experience, most of it's leaving the state or going into illegal marijuana dispensaries. That's a situation where you had money coming from overseas and buying up real estate. Other situations...
Was it in a normal residential neighborhood?
It was in typical middle America residential neighborhood, middle class family.
In LA, right? In LA.
In the San Gabriel Valley. But wow. Three houses on one block were used to grow marijuana, owned by the same individual.
And did the neighbors find out, or how did this come to you guys?
You know, a lot of times, yes, the neighbors found out. They put a tip into the local law enforcement, El Monte Police Department, which then effectuated a search warrant and went from home to home to find all three illegal operations.
And what are the tips, or what are the signs of something? What did they see?
Certain cultivation facilities, you have your typical signs. You have homes that have blinds on their windows. They have air conditioning running even during the winter. The smell of marijuana is a dead giveaway. But a lot of times they'll cover the smell of marijuana by having large carbon filters. Those carbon filters are noisy because they're using HVAC systems to run air through them. So when you hear noise, when you hear air conditioner systems, when you see all the windows blacked out or have tinfoil over them, then you typically know this might be a cultivation facility. Another example is when homes don't have people actually going to them. They seem like they're vacant, but they keep having air conditioners on. So those are examples of where we believe there might be illegal cultivation occurring. We had a 100,000 square foot industrial property that was taken over, turned into a multi, over a period of years. And this is over three or four different warrants executed at the property. It was used for a illegal nightclub where people were not only selling hard drugs, illegal alcohol, but it seemed they were doing karaoke. A lot of times in karaoke, you have the intersection with prostitution. You had the sale and cultivation of psilocybin at the property. One of the rooms was turned into a large, what they call magic mushroom grow. And then you had marijuana facilities cultivation taking place at the property and marijuana manufacturing, basically taking the marijuana, turning into marijuana oil, and then distributing it for edibles or for vape pens at this one property.
Just a little small refill sells retail about $60 to $80. The illegal grow operation, they manufacture this, and there's different steps. So you have the hydroponic system that'll come in and grow the cannabis operations, and then the harvesting and taking down of the plants, and then cooking of the plants if they're making it into an oil to the oil substance. People probably wouldn't know the difference. They just drive by and it looks like a residential house that could be, you know, in a regular suburban neighborhood, or a commercial building that is rented or leased out to somebody involved in this industry. So usually we've seen this is very, very organized from a high level. We've seen a lot of from Chinese nationals that are actually funding the sources. And then from there, the organization breaks down for different components that's involved in the manufacturing of cannabis to eventually the consumer.
From what we've heard, there's not a lot of consequence when people get caught.
We were at a dispensary in South LA. We had applied to the court on behalf of the city we represent to obtain a receivership order for the court to take over the property and take over the illegal business, this illegal marijuana dispensary. So we coordinated with the local sheriff's department, Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. They executed a warrant and also executed the receivership order on the property. Of course, they go in before, we show up after the property's cleared.
So they raid the property.
They raided the property. They go through, basically arrest and detain anyone that's at the property. They then search the property, not only the individuals for narcotics and weapons, but they also search the property for weapons. During that search, they found multiple firearms. And not only that, but they found marijuana. They found psilocybin. They also found other types of narcotics that resembled MDMA or ecstasy, pills. Much like what's sold with, you know, fentanyl in it. They sequestered and detained all that, took evidence. Property's clear. So we show up, myself on behalf of the city, as well as the receiver who's appointed by the court and represents the court. We walk through the property. On my way in, I look over and I see the patrol car. Inside the patrol car is a young gentleman, the deputies told me, is the one operating the location. He's in the back of the patrol car handcuffed.
So he's arrested. Yeah,
he's arrested. We feel safe. We walk into the property, start looking at the different types of evidence that's there, looking at the marijuana, looking at the other types of psilocybin, the other types of hard drugs. The guns weren't there, but we knew the guns were there. We see the money. They're counting the money, recording everything. We walk to the back of the property and I start speaking to the receivership about his plan and how he intends to take over the property to stop it from being used to continue to sell marijuana. Of course, his goal is to shut down the property, put a fence up, lock the doors. At that moment, the same individual that was in the back of the patrol car is now in the back of the dispensary demanding his computer and to come back into the property.
Wow.
Shocked, I go, what are you doing here? What is happening? I look over, I'm looking for a deputy to wonder if he escaped from the car, because it doesn't make sense to me that after walking through and seeing the narcotics, knowing the guns and seeing the money, that individual is out of the car and in the back of the dispensary. Because of the current rules, policies, not enforcing, and it's on the sheriff's department. It's what they're ordered to do. They cited and released him because that's what they're allowed to do. He's in the back of the dispensary now after being cited, released, his information taken down according to current policy and demanding his laptop. Of course, the receiver told him no. We told him he needed to leave, which he eventually did after, you know, sharing words with us. Probably 20 minutes later, the local law enforcement did another search of the property and found a gun, maybe 5 feet from us.
So he could have used the gun.
If he got in the property, if he were to go for the gun. But the fact that he is released, because that's the policy, is what creates concern for me. There are rules in place. If our prosecutorial agencies would enforce those rules, that individual wouldn't be back at that property, wouldn't be demanding to be enter the property to get the laptop, which has evidence of his drug sales. So,
Wow. Yeah.
So those are examples of how I think we need to gear policy towards the bad actors. Really, those that realize that there's no punishment, there's no downside to doing the illegal activity, there's no downside to drug dealing and carrying guns. We need to change that. We need to show there's a downside. That's why we're called in to these different cities. You would find law enforcement would go and they'd spend hours, and I mean tens, hundreds of hours investigating these illegal operations where you have other types of narcotics. They would then file their report with the local DA's office, and because of the current policies, they would not be prosecuted. Very rarely would these cases actually be filed for felony charges.
It's very difficult to pursue criminal charges in these types of cases, because you have the burden of proof is obviously much higher in a criminal case than it is a civil case. That's just our justice system that we have. But being able to spend the resources and investigate any property crime, what a lot of people view as a property crime, and be able to track down who is ultimately responsible from a criminal perspective is extremely challenging. Not to mention that our detectives are already overburdened with people crimes. So allocating resources to them to investigate these cases to try to track down who's criminally responsible is difficult.
And so we were called in to help find an alternative solution. And so we approached on a civil nuisance abatement, which is quasi-criminal, but we approached in the civil courts under the full direction of the city attorneys that in the cities we work in. And so that way we can actually pursue not only the property owner, but the operators for civil penalties and injunctions to stop the illegal activity.
Is it really big now? Is it growing a lot? Is there a lot of these houses?
At a minimum, over 50% of the sales of marijuana in California are illegal, at a minimum. Some reports have it up to 90% of the sales in marijuana are illegal sales. Now, the state has a system where all sales are tracked through metric, meaning that all sales of marijuana are centered through the California Department of Cannabis Control. They know where each sale takes place. But if 90% are taking place, that means they're taking place not through metric. They're taking place at places like these dispensaries or at the grow houses or warehouses where they're shipped out of state.
And these cities, are they equipped with dealing with this? How much resources do they have to deal with it?
I fortunately work for cities that have some resources to put towards narcotics enforcement, but a lot of cities don't have not only the resources, but now the time or commitment to direct towards this type of work. And so a lot of cities realize, I've heard, we don't have a problem. Some cities will say that. The reality is for these cities that they don't realize they have a problem because they don't have law enforcement officers that are able to spot the problem. Like we said earlier about the homes where you have them tinfoiled or sealed up, where they have air conditioners running during the winter, where there's a high amount of electrical usage. If you do not have law enforcement officers able to identify that location as a potential illegal marijuana grow, then you, of course, don't know there's a problem. And so the reality is that cities don't have the resources or the money. And even if they did, the result is that the individuals will simply get arrested, released, and continue to do what they're doing.
Folks, you've probably been hearing me talk about VyRefi for a while now. VyRefi has been getting a ton of phone calls from you, and I thank you for supporting an investment that actually helps people. A lot of people are talking about this investment, and I'd like to review the basics with you. First off, yes, it's true. You can earn up to 10.25% fixed rate of return that's not correlated to the stock market or to the Fed. You can turn your income on or off, compounded, whatever you choose, and there are absolutely no fees. There are no restrictions on your principal if you ever need your money back, and you'll get your monthly statement with no surprises. If you are not sure if you can trust this economy, this secure collateralized portfolio may be a very good option for you. Just go to investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refi.com. Folks, I take my endorsements very seriously. If you're looking for a solid investment that helps people, contact my friends at VyRefi and then tell them Siamak Karami sent you. Now let's go back to the interview.
And have you guys noticed anybody coming trying to steal? Because this has been happening. In this, across other areas where people come and there's shootouts at this grow site because people come try to steal. Is that happening in the city areas?
Yeah, no, we have numerous cases where we find out about the illegal grow because there were burglaries that occurred or a shootout in certain situations. But it happens quite a bit. Anytime you have narcotics that are illicit, you'll likely have money and you'll likely have firearms. Those three combined and not only create the incentive for people to rob the location, but the incentive to defend themselves, which creates potential for violence.
When we saw in the rural areas, there's an element of bullying the community. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the sheriff of Siskiyou County told me that there's areas where if he goes, people will come to him and try to tell him not to come here. This is our area. Or if the hikers go, people with machine guns will tell them, don't come in this area. Is that element coming to the city or is it hidden in the cities?
I can give you one example and without going to specific details because it's ongoing, but there was a sign located outside of a cultivation facility where this local gang explicitly said, this property is under protection of this gang If you have any issues, come talk to this individual. So it is explicit where gangs are out standing up and saying, we protect this warehouse, or we protect this home, or we protect these individuals because of their illicit activity. It's mind-boggling, let me tell you. You know, I've seen, been around for quite a while around this area, and to see local street gangs actually put signs up telling others that we protect this location tells us just how afraid they are of being found out about or being charged criminally.
They don't care about
it. They don't care. I mean, you asked earlier about one example that's, especially in urban areas, that's terrifying.
They even put their names on it.
They put their names, their moniker, their gang names as to who to come talk to.
And is it because of Prop 64 that we are having this problem? Because from what we heard, that the number of illegal grows skyrocketed after Prop 64.
That's true. And I'll say there's a correlation between Prop 64 and the illegal grows and cultivation. I would say that it probably added to it because now marijuana was declassified, or at least on a local level, and it became less of a threat or a higher felony. However, what we're seeing is still activity I would consider felonious activity involving large amounts of cultivation, other types of narcotics, the use of guns at cultivation facilities. So even though Prop 64 passed, a lot of the activity that we're seeing would still be considered felonious activity or felony activity and could be enforced that way. I think it's more Prop 64 with local policy on what to focus on and what to enforce against.
So essentially, Prop 64, if you have the plants, if you have the grows without the guns and other things, the human trafficking, you can get away with it. You get a ticket, right?
You would get a ticket. It would be a misdemeanor in most circumstances, unless certain criteria are met. At some point, you go federal. At some point, the federal government should step in and enforce. But for the most part, it's immaterial to how much you have.
Yeah. So then on top of it, so you get a ticket, so it's not that big of a deal. But then if you have other things like guns and human trafficking, then you could get in trouble.
Yeah.
But it depends on jurisdiction.
Well, I would say this. I think LA County has not prioritized this enforcement. It's clear as day, and I think it'd be hard-pressed for the district attorney's office to say that they are. They are not enforcing these crimes, period. Whether there's narcotics at the location, whether there's guns at the location, I've seen enough of these cases to know that they're not being filed.
Some people might say that they're doing this, let them just do it. What's the big deal about this? What are your thoughts on that?
Those people don't live across the street from these illegal dispensaries. The people that say, let's just do it, don't live down the street from a house that blew up because they were manufacturing marijuana illegally without the safety concerns. Those people don't have relatives that are forced to work in the grow houses, despite the fact that they simply wanted to come to this country to live a better life. So those people that say, let them just do it, have no understanding of the effects that's occurring. They probably live in nicer neighborhoods in the cities that I represent that can't afford to actually enforce against the laws. Sure, if you live in Beverly Hills, they're not going to set up a dispensary in your neighborhood. But if you live in South LA, they might do that. And so the people that say, just do it, it's because it doesn't affect your neighborhood.
And do you ever feel afraid of the work you're doing? Because you're actually going after them. Legally, you're trying to go after these people, right?
Yeah, I am. I don't feel afraid. I know that what I'm doing is the right thing to do. I know that I focus on going after the bad actors and to an extent work our way up to the people that are truly responsible.
And how much work does it get to those people?
Many times there's multiple layers between the actual person that's selling the marijuana and the person profiting from the marijuana sales. What we found, a common denominator amongst every type of illegal operation, is that it needs to be done in a certain place, a property. Our focus is the property owners. Property owners almost always know what's going on at their property. You can't miss it. If your house was turned into a marijuana cultivation facility, you know. If your warehouse is being used to manufacture marijuana, you know. If your storefront that you own, that's worth millions of dollars, is selling marijuana, you know. So we go after the property owners. And by going for the property owners, we get directly to the initial transaction, which is the lease. In order for a property to be rented, there needs to be a lease, or at least some kind of agreement to allow the property to be used for that purpose. By doing that, we're able to find out who the landowner was dealing with. And in doing so, we get more likely get to the individual that's responsible for the illegal activity. Sometimes it's the property owner. Sometimes it's the that actually is in charge of the illegal activity. Sometimes it's the person that's renting it. If the property owner did a background check or a credit check, then we'll be able to find out who as well.
And then how do you go after them?
We file our case. So after our investigation, we file our case against the individual, the property owner, for nuisance abatement and allowing for the illegal activity to occur in those different cities. And that's how we approach it. But then further through our discovery, we're able to obtain financial records, information on where the money came from to purchase the property, whether where the money came from to pay for the rent, who the individuals were they were speaking with. And we're able to then find out who is truly involved. We've seen a lot of involvement of foreign nationals in the operations of different grow houses. We've seen money come from abroad that is used to buy properties where the grow houses are used. We've seen individuals that are tied to transnational criminal organizations involved in the operation of different grow houses. I'll give you an example of a case that just settled in Sacramento. It was the U.S. Attorney's Office prosecuted a case in Sacramento where they took down over 100 homes. At one, wow. Over 2 days, they executed warrants at over 100 homes. Each home was being used for cultivation of marijuana.
In residential areas.
Residential areas. And that individual that they eventually prosecuted and eventually pled guilty, I believe this past March, was tied to the Chinese national government.
Wow.
And so that is one example of a connection between illegal cultivation in the United States, in California, and individuals that have relationships back to.
So ties to the Chinese Communist Party.
To the government and to the individual in the Chinese National Party. Yes.
Cartels have a hand in this too, or is it?
What we're seeing is that a lot of operations have the involvement of Chinese transnational organizations. Now, I'm not seeing a lot of cartel involvement, but I am seeing a lot of local street gang involvement involving local Mexican street gangs.
Entities from China, they're coming here, they're buying these grow houses, but they're leveraging the local Hispanic and other gangs like to operate, to help them operate it.
What I find is the local Latino gangs or local gangs, whether in different cities, sometimes it's gangs that are traditionally African-American gangs, are brought on board as protection and operations. They're actually not the money behind the operation. They're not the individuals that own the property or individuals that are paying the rent directly. They are just the front of the operation and they provide protection because it's taking place in their neighborhoods.
So you mentioned there's 100 homes in Sacramento, and this is pretty shocking. Mm-hmm. Were these homes in one area or were they scattered throughout the...
They're scattered throughout the Sacramento area. I mean, it was all under one organized group that was doing it. It was wild. I mean, talking to my resources, they had to bring federal agents in from outside of Sacramento, of course, to effectuate the warrants on those 2 days.
That's a huge operation because you had 100 sites, right? And one person doing it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So people think this is a California issue. This is not a California issue. This is an international issue. This is a national issue. The marijuana cultivated those facilities was not just staying in California. It's quite possibly was going through the rest of the United States. And the marijuana cultivated here illegally is then sent to other states, whether it's Detroit, whether it's Atlanta, whether it's Boston, whether it's New York. There's a premium, and something people should know, there's a premium to having California cannabis or California weed. The other states,
why is that?
Because it's considered the best.
Oh, okay.
Aside from that being positive for California's marketing, it's negative for the rest of the community. People are paying extra for the marijuana when it hits Chicago, and it's going to the south side of Chicago, when it hits New York, when it hits Atlanta, people are paying premium for it. But that's what's encouraging the cultivation and manufacture of marijuana here in California on the illicit market.
And is it because also we have really loose penalties, or is it just people like the marijuana from California?
You know, it's interesting. I heard that Michigan recently increased their penalties on enforcing its illegal marijuana. That closed their borders, pretty much. A lot of the marijuana that was leaving the state illegally here and going to Michigan now can't enter Michigan. So that's had a direct effect on the marijuana market here. And so, yes, the penalties are one thing, but also the market forces are another. And so when you have lax penalties, you don't pay taxes, and you have a welcoming market in places like Atlanta or New York or even middle of this country, you're finding more and people are willing to cultivate marijuana here.
Why are so many people leaving California?
It wasn't long ago, people from everywhere wanted to move to the Golden State to enjoy a better life. Sadly, the standard of living has been dropping in the past decade. Are you like me and wonder why this is happening? I'm Siamak Karami, host of California Insider. In our film, Leaving California, The Untold Story, I take you on an intimate journey of love, loss, tragedy, and hope as residents face the prospect of leaving their beloved state. Everyday people like you tell their stories about why they have to move out of the state even though they don't want to. Experts and policymakers also give insights about what's happening behind the scenes. Together, we get to the root cause of this exodus. Go to leavingcalifornia.com to view the first 15 minutes of the film for free. By watching Leaving California, you can be part of the solution. Again, go to leavingcalifornia.com. And the purpose of Prop 64 was to actually create this legalized market so that it collects tax for that and then legalize everything. But apparently, most of these legal marijuana dispensaries are going out of business and there's no tax, real tax generated.
That's right. I mean, from my standpoint, Proposition 64 was to help lower penalties for additional or incidental drug users, create a legal market so the government can actually regulate it and generate tax revenue from it. Well, unfortunately, the opposite's true. The local individuals that Prop 64 was concerned about protecting are now, you know, out there. They're not being punished, which is probably good. They're not going to prison for low-level offenses. But the legal industry, which was developed, which were billions of dollars was put into that legal industry to help develop it, is now failing. You can't have a successful industry if over 50% of the sales in California are going outside the legal industry.
And then there's no taxes as a result of it.
Well, there's taxes. The state's not collecting any of them. And the reason why the state's not collecting them is because all the illegal sales are not being registered as proper sales.
This is very, very high-level sophistication, organized networks that come in and they know what they're doing systematically in creating these manufacturing or grow sites.
Can you tell us an example of what you have seen that showed you this is like organized?
There'll be whole warehouse buildings, walls that are cut off to make more interior walls for certain stages in the grow operation. So you have from seed to mature plant and harvest time, and they change it by room, so they move the plants around accordingly so that in different stages, that's the way they harvest. But huge warehouse buildings, so thousands of square feet. Homes that are 3,000 square feet or more that are just filled with cannabis. So these are not small mom-and-pop shops. This is extremely sophisticated. And then on the investigative side, when they follow the money trails and stuff with the search warrants for the bank accounts and what's going on behind the scenes, you're able to kind of figure out how organized these operations really are. There's guns involved, stolen items, stolen cars, major criminal records for some of the lower level people that are doing the operational sites. And it's very dangerous when you have a lot of money. These operations are worth a lot of money. This is millions of dollars in investments and the actual grow itself. So they will do many times what's necessary to protect their assets.
Now, if you guys didn't do the civil cases, let's say some of your neighboring cities, what would be the consequences if they found a house in a neighborhood that's an illegal grower?
They could call a narcotics team to come out and cut down the plants and dispose of the plants and just leave, because a lot many times there's nobody there or they've already escaped if there was someone guarding the facility. Sometimes they're guarding it through video surveillance and keeping eyes on it there. So there might not be anyone even detained. But again, lots of times they don't know what to do because this is all fairly new to California. And some people in the community have misconceptions. Well, it's just marijuana, that it's okay. It's legal now. Well, it's legal under the right circumstances when it's a licensed manufacturing site in certain specific areas where it's allowed. That misconception that creates problems where sometimes community members don't even call us when they do suspect something's going on or they don't know.
For some of those people that may not know, What are the risks of having, let's say, an illegal grow in your community, your neighborhood?
Yeah, well, there's increased criminals in your community. There's risks of, you know, contamination, fire, chemical exposures. Sometimes they'll deal, you know, they'll try to burn stuff in backyards that polluting the air, polluting the community, and just illegally dumping certain toxic chemicals into your community. It's dangerous in the sense that these community, in a residential community, it's not designed to have commercial activity going on. And, you know, so you have people living in a residential community with the traffic, sometimes illicit traffic, sometimes late night traffic of illicit operations.
Do you have any advice for the people of LA that might have, might see suspicious things in their communities? Do you have any thoughts for them?
Yes, absolutely. Report it to the police. And that can be frustrating because depending on where you live, sometimes they're not properly trained on all the illegal cannabis stuff, but keep calling. Be persistent. If you care about your community, don't call once and nothing happens, or you think nothing happens and then give up. Sometimes there is an investigation going on where you're not going to be aware of the circumstances, and these investigations can take a long time. So your one call may take a while, but be persistent and keep calling the police and be an advocate for the safety and benefit of your community and the next generation.
Is there a fix for this, in your opinion?
Well, I think the government needs to take narcotics abatement very seriously. They need to actually enforce the laws. Prop 64, for instance, maybe does not allow you to for the cultivation of marijuana to be a felony. But if you're fined someone that's cultivating marijuana, selling marijuana, and selling other types of narcotics, in addition to having guns on them, we need to start enforcing those rules. Because only then, when we enforce the rules, we'll be able to actually go after the bad actors, the organized crime, the true criminals, and maybe allow Prop 64 to prosper. I think on another level, cities need the money to actually focus on educating their community. Many times the illegal operations or organizations take advantage of the community believing marijuana is okay to allow them to rent the buildings to set up these different operations. We need to educate our community. Many times there are immigrant communities that are unaware of the rules. And you have individuals who work hard, they immigrate to this country. In that situation, the individual spoke Mandarin. That was their main language. Their secondary language is English. That individual thought and was told that it was legal. And they were sent articles. And I know this from reading their text messages. And they were told, no, this is fine. It's California. It's legal. That individual wasn't educated. And they allowed it to occur on their property. And only through that did we understand just how much a lack of education plays into the rolling out of these illegal growth facilities.
Because people are told it's legal and I'm not doing anything wrong in
that's
their
right.
house.
That's right. And in that situation, that individual actually inquired and said, are you sure this is legal? And the individual is doing it illegally wrote back and said, well, you can Google it. Don't worry about it. Here's an article. The homeowner, of course, after we received that information, we were able to work a settlement with them and make sure the property was never going to be used to grow marijuana or other types of illicit drugs again. However, education's a big part of it because the people that are taken advantage of, the victims, are not only the people that are being trafficked, but also sometimes the people that own the property that are being lied to and being used to facilitate this illegal activity.
And that neighborhood, they're putting all that neighborhood in danger because if somebody comes for a shootout, kids in the streets.
A shootout or if the facility is used to manufacture marijuana. Many times they use combustible, flammable materials to remove the THC from the marijuana plant. And if they don't have the proper oversight by the government, those facilities sometimes leak the flammable liquid and become centers of explosion. That happened once in one of our cases. The whole warehouse blew up, basically leveled that warehouse and affected the neighborhood around it. It was a commercial building across the street from a residential location.
And did it put anybody's life in danger? Or
thank God no one died. Thank God no one, you know, was hurt. But there were property damage, you know, at least 500 feet radius from that building.
We've created a municipal ordinance that empowers a local government to place additional fines in addition to what the state has already done for illegal operations. And with the vision of our city manager at the time, because where I work, we did legalize cannabis at a local level and for retail and manufacturing. So in order to protect, in a sense, that industry, But our city manager very early on, Ms. Alma Martinez, she had the vision to retain special counsel to deal with the illegal cannabis components and what that's going to cause, the harm that's going to cause to the legal cannabis industry. So with Mr. Welch and his firm, we've been able to successfully combat the illegal operations.
Do you think Prop 64 should be fixed or changed?
Well, I think it's how people view Prop 64. People look at it as a broadsword. It really, they basically say, oh, marijuana is legal now. And the people in charge of enforcing laws are hands off. They need to really take more of a sort of sophisticated look at Prop 64, understand how it works with the local law enforcement and local narcotics issues. They need to step away from this broadsword, sort of broad strokes approach and look at the law. If there's narcotics, if there are guns, and there's marijuana, that's a felony. It needs to be enforced. Those individuals need to be prosecuted in the criminal courts. They do not need to rely on people to use quasi-criminal means of enforcing through narcotics abatement. It only creates more damage for the community. It only creates more costs. And in the end, it sends the wrong message. People will continue to violate the law.
So if you do the $500, is it a $500 ticket, right?
You know, $500,000 tickets a day.
For these guys is nothing, right?
Even when it is, the only person that matters is the landlord. But as I said earlier, sometimes the landlords are lied to, they're unaware. They're still responsible. Do not get me wrong. They're still liable for those fines and fees. But the best way to stop this from occurring is to enforce our felony laws against those that are violating the law.
Now, do you have any other thoughts for our audience, David?
Again, I shared earlier about my concerns about the people that say they should just not enforce these rules altogether. These small, let's call them quality of life crimes, okay? Let's just say that quality of life crimes grow to be much bigger. They may start off by just someone growing 100, 400 plants of marijuana. But after a while, when that person makes significant money from growing their 400 plants of marijuana and realize that simply they're not going to be in trouble, that money will go towards buying protection, buying guns. They're going to want to advance themselves to buy other types of narcotics. Maybe they can sell along with the marijuana they're growing to increase their profits. It's human nature. Unless we stop it at some point, and that needs to be early on, then it's just going to exasperate and grow into greater problems for society. And to the situations that we end up seeing, where you have the robberies, or you have people coordinating with local street gangs for protection, or you have warehouses blowing up because people decided not just grow marijuana, but manufacture marijuana oil. We need to stop it early. We need to get in there. And there is a legal system for this. They need to comply and force these people to comply with the legal system instead of going around the system.
David Wells, Special Counsel for Narcotic Enforcement. It was great to have you on California Insider.
Thank you so much for having me as well.
We have an exciting news for you. At California Insider, we created a new product. It's called California Insider Opinion. This is where our insiders and experts across the state are actually telling you what's going on behind the headlines. When there's a breaking news, a big issue, important issue happening in California, they're going to come on the screen and tell you what's happening behind the scenes. And these are like 7 to 10 minutes of opinion formats where the guests are talking to the camera directly, telling you what's happening.
You're paying a tax increase of tens of thousands of dollars every year as a condition of keeping what you already own.
Make sure to look at the description below because you want to sign up on our newsletter, because a lot of these opinions might be very sensitive that some people in the social media platform may not like. So we're putting them in the newsletter on our website so you can have them. These opinions will actually help you understand the political and policy landscape of California. We highly recommend you follow it.